pudding people, to another episode of Everybody Loves Pudding. I'm your host, Ken Seymour, with your most immaculate and shiny second host, Richard Geiger.
I am here in the wild of my car, soundproof, resistant, loving every minute of our recording in our hermetically sealed separate locations.
Yeah, it's almost like we're back during the pandemic ages, the number of remote recordings that we've been doing recently.
Yeah, but you know what? Luckily, I have been spared with the most serious of sicknesses, but I feel like the sickness is everywhere.
Yes.
The sickness is rising. Don't try to deny what you feel, you know? So that's why we've been doing this. We're keeping each other safe, right? We're thinking about each other because that's what we do.
When there are kids are involved and family involved, we don't want them to get cross-infected and just, we already had that one thing that took us out for a couple of months. I'd rather not have that happen again.
Exactly.
All right. Well, you know, if you couldn't tell by our rather random beginning, we're going to be doing a movie review. It's been a little while since we've done one. This is like a warm-up because, you know, we got Captain America coming up here in about a week that we're going to watch and then review. So we need to get back into form, back into shape. And there's no better way to do that than to watch a children's movie.
Okay, so it's a children's movie, yes.
A good one.
A good one, a very good one. A children's movie, I guess you could say, targeted towards kids. But, you know, sometimes you watch the kids' movies and they're targeted towards kids and there's underlying adult themes.
Mm-hmm.
And so it makes it much more palatable. But I think this one is even different than that. It's got all the kid themes and the adult hidden themes, but it's not palatable. I think it's very enjoyable across the board.
All right. And we're talking, of course, about The Wild Robot, released in 2024, now on streaming on the Peacock.
Yes.
So
watch some Royal Rumble and then switch right over to The Wild Robot.
Yeah, we normally do an episode on the Royal Rumble, but I have a funny feeling that I don't really have anything new to say other than... You know, this wrestler missed a lot of spots, and that wrestler, I don't know who that is anymore. So we might forego the Royal Rumble this year, even though I did watch it because I've never missed one. Well, let's rephrase that. I've seen them all. I didn't watch them all when they came out because that it just wasn't possible at the time. But anyway. Focus. I can focus. See, this is why we've got to work up to this. We've got to get ready and be able to be right where we need to be. We're going to talk about The Wild Robot. We're going to do our normal spoiler-free review and then get into the nitpickiness that is our normal spread of points that can be up to 100 if it's perfect, all the way down at 0 if it is just amazingly awful. We have not had a perfect score. We have not had a 0.
we've come closer to perfect than we have to 0, though.
Yes, yes, we have. But we're going to, you know, divert into multiple categories, cast and director, costuming and props, location, score, cinematography, plot and writing, and any bonus points we decide to throw just because we can. Let's get into
it. The bonus points. Yeah. Love them.
So, what do you think? General, non-spoilery reaction to the film. Is this something that they should go back in time a year and see in the theaters?
If you have children's and you're okay with spending, you know, $60 to go watch a movie, like, it's movie month, right? Like, you're going to, like, maybe you do it once a month. Maybe you do it once every other month. There hasn't really been that draw from the Marvel movies that sometimes bring people out. This one would have been a great movie as a family to go and see. Absolutely.
Yeah, I agree with you there. If this was live and I had an idea of what to do, I would have definitely gone see this in the theaters and enjoyed the heck out of it. It's definitely worth streaming. And if you have children that like to watch things on repeat, yeah, you better buy a copy, because I have a funny feeling they're going to want to watch this kind of over and over and over again.
Yeah. It's hard for me to tell you, like, you don't have Peacock. Should you get Peacock to stream this movie? Well, if you were, let's say you were leaning, you're on the precipice of doing it, but you just need something to give you that tilt. You're like, I love The Office and I want to watch it, but I don't know if I want to pay to have a subscription to watch it. Hey, here's a good movie to kind of tip the scales in the balance of doing it.
Yeah. So that's our non-spoilery advice and thoughts. Now we're going to get into details. So if you have not seen this film yet, you may wish to pause, come back once you have fulfilled your need for animated glory, and then see if we are correct in our estimations. But for those of you that either have already seen it or just don't care, on we go.
On we go.
So we're going to do this. We'd been starting with like score and kind of moving around. This time we're going to go straight down the list just because it's what I feel like doing today. So we're going to start with the cast.
Cast. Let's see here. Solid, cast. The cast was, of all the voices, of all the people, of all the things that were done, to me, I can keep it real simple. There was one that really bugged me, and that was it. And I even had some trouble deciphering who some of the voices were, who they belonged to, because it didn't match what my experience in hearing them was.
Right. The Roz was really good. What is the name of that actress?
Lupita Nyong'o.
Yeah, she's awesome. She's been in quite a few things here and there. Especially recently, she's kind of had a hot streak. Yeah. I mean, if you like a little bit of horror, she was in Us. If you like our Marvel side of things, she is in Black Panther. I mean, that's just naming a couple of a lot of things that she's been in recently.
She's been in a variety of things, and I think, yeah, she was in Star Wars. She did a voice in Star Wars. Anyway, let's ignore those. you might have seen a commercial or trailer for her. She's in, like, the newest of the Quiet Place series of films.
Right.
So she's been busy.
Yeah, so she did a great job with the lead on that. Pedro Pascal as Fink. That one I caught on to pretty quickly. We love Pedro Pascal.
Yeah, he was one I was trying to decipher who that was, and I was like, what am I missing here? I know that voice, I just can't put the face to the voice. So when I, of course, looked at it, because I, usually when you, I don't know if you do this, when you watch a movie, you watch a TV show, you have your phone with you, and you're looking up stuff, and you're constantly viewing stuff, I just set my phone down. I just watched the movie. I didn't look at the phone the entire time.
Right.
I think that's probably why I enjoyed it so much more.
That is exactly kind of one of the comments I was going to make. It's like, because I went into it even slightly different. It's like, my wife decided she wanted to watch this film, because I hadn't heard anything about it, and she'd been wanting to see it for a while. It's like, I'm going to watch this. It's like, all right, you go ahead and watch this. I don't know if I really want to. I'm getting some stuff together, and she starts putting it on. I'm looking at it as I'm getting my stuff together to leave to the other room, and it starts playing, and I put my stuff down, and I sit down. It's like, okay, this is actually pretty good. And I didn't leave.
Yeah, I think part of it, first of all, and we're still talking about the cast, and we get easily distracted, but, you know, this will be a cinematography thing, but the artwork is excellent.
It's pretty gorgeous.
And I think it's easy to get drawn in by that on its own.
And then we got Kit Connor as Bright Bill. I thought he did a good job.
Mm-hmm.
running into Bill Nye at one point in the film, that was just a nice surprise. You can't not recognize his voice. And that
I will say that was my one that I was like, this is, it's like forced. I don't know if he's done much animation or stuff, but his, of all the voices, his just seemed off to me.
I think the only reason it seemed off is his was the only one with that strong of an accent.
And that's true, but I just didn't get the, I don't know, like the dialogue, how it was being delivered was just something about it.
Well, they brought his character out of nowhere with no development when everybody else had such good development up until that point.
Yep.
Yeah. So, okay, that's a different category.
That's okay, yeah.
Got Ving Rhames in there as Thunderbolt.
Oh, yeah, that was cool.
I always dig me a little Ving Rhames. He can kind of get that really excellent bass going. I mean, you got Matt Berry. If you're not familiar with some of what we do in the shadows, he's friggin' hilarious in his role there, and he does a great job. I was like you. I had no idea Thorne was Mark Hamill when I was watching it. Just did not register.
No, because he's got as much as you want him to be, you know, Luke Skywalker, he's so much more in the animated world. Like he's one of the best kind of like voices out there for certain characters. So
easily. And then you got of course Catherine O'Hara's Pinktail. I love Catherine O'Hara. I'll listen to her pretty much anytime. I like her in nearly everything except for the second of the Beetlejuice films.
That's
but you know, you can't win them all. She's if you're awesome in everything but one film, and it's still probably not your fault for the film that you're not awesome in, I think I could take that.
You get a pass.
She had a couple really good inflections in this where they're talking about motherhood and what it's like to be a mother. It's like, yeah, and it's just this way. the way that she's just like, oh man, that's one of those things you're talking about. That's for the parents right there, because the kid's not gonna get that. It's like, we love you so much, I need a nap.
Yeah, it's very, very good. A lot of those you know, like parenting situations in general, when the robot is just going at things in a, you know, a factual delivery, and it just, you know, like that's not quite how it works. So it's very good.
Yeah. So, I mean, getting the voices that they did for this particular animated film is just, they got the right group of people, and everybody seemed to gel really well and seemed to actually not phone it in.
Yeah, I think the studio, because if I'm not mistaken, is this the studio that did How to Train Your Dragon?
I believe so.
So that I don't know that I've even seen that movie start to finish, but I know enough to know that that's a top tier film, and then of course it spawned many sequels after that, and even a live action presentation. So I think the studio knows what. I think the studio knows what's going on in terms of these types of movies. So kudos to the good casting.
Yeah, I definitely think so. Out of 20, what would you give the casting?
I went with an 18.
I think I'm really nearly right there with you. I got to go with a 17. I think the only thing that could have made it better is some more characters with also equally good castings.
Correct.
Yes, so good start. All right, let's talk a little bit about the director. Directed by Chris Sanders. Are you familiar with Chris Sanders' work? I bet you are.
I'm familiar with his grandfather's work, Delicious Fried Chicken.
Well,
that's not true. Let's see, what has he done? Lilo and Stitch? Oh, see, he did the screenplay for How to Train Your Dragon.
Right.
Okay.
That's why I said weird. That's like, it's funny you bring up How You Train Your Dragon. Oh. Now, the interesting thing is if you look at his stuff, he's known for a lot of writing. He's known for a lot. He's got several acting for doing voices on these works. But if you look for directing, this is looks like his first directorial debut.
This is it. Oh my gosh, he's Stitch.
Yeah, he is.
Okay. And he's Percival. For all you PJ Masks fans out there.
I gotta say, I'm pretty impressed. I have to say, I know a lot of names by heart. This is not one that struck a chord with me just because, you can only know so many people. If I had read it, it's like, yeah, I'm going to see this movie. I love everything else he's ever done.
Look at this. So, writer. This goes back to the 90s, so like 30 years ago, 30 plus years ago. Beauty and the Beast.
Right.
Aladdin. Lion King. Mulan. Lilo and Stitch. Oh, my gosh. He crushed it. So it makes sense that this would be a good movie.
Yeah, that's crazy that I just this one just slid by. I did not even realize. So this would have gotten me excited to go see the film in the first place. But, being kind of nervous, like, well, he's never directed anything. I mean, it's animated, sure, but you still have to have a cohesive idea and get everything to work together and all that sort of stuff. And your editors have to do a good job of getting rid of, the unnecessary stuff. And, it's a little easier. You're not shooting extra footage because you're having to pay artists to render and everything. So maybe it's more deciding ahead of time in the storyboard what's going to get made and how that's going to come to pass. But, yeah, he knows what he's doing.
Yeah, good. It's not like he's got 100 credits on here, He just has a handful.
They're just all bangers.
And they're all, like top tier. Like, okay. Yeah, you're exactly right. Like, if there was more fanfare about this movie or just more knowledge put out there about this movie, I feel like it would have more people have been excited about it.
Yeah, all you would have had to do is, maybe part of that is I don't see commercials in the same way that I used to. I mean, there's no network television I'm watching anymore. So if I'm seeing commercials, it's got to be on YouTube or it's got to be on the handful of streaming services that I allow to show me commercials because I don't want to freaking see commercials or previews at the movie theater. And that was coming off of a Slim Pickens period. Films.
Yeah.
So I'm not surprised I didn't hear about this, but
I heard about it. I'd seen it in a spot or two, but nothing. It was one of those like 30-second ones, not the full trailer. And I could tell by the trailer that the stuff looked pretty good. And then when you had said, "Hey, let's do the review on this," I knew the movie you were talking about. I'd familiar enough to remember seeing trailers, short ones about it. So I knew the visuals were going to be top tier, but yeah, cast and director. Oh my gosh.
Yeah. That's again, not perfect, but darn near it for me. That's a 13 to 15.
I believe I did the same thing.
Oh, so similar mindsets are we so far so good. Going into costuming and props, obviously there's no costuming, not in the traditional sense in an animated film. Props, same kind of concept, but it's like, what did they focus on? What were the design elements? It's kind of just replaced by how were the characters designed and implemented. And you got a lot of forest critters. So how do you... not personify, but how do you make them have enough human-like features but still feel like wild animals? And did they successfully pull it off, or is it just over-the-top absurd like some animated things can be? And I feel like they struck a pretty nice balance on that.
I think so, too. It was, let's keep the animals, you know, true to form in a 90% way. And you had to have some, you know, maybe slightly different facial features, how they interacted, right? So they basically said these animals talk to each other in animal speak, but it's the way they presented them doing that kept them as if they were actual animals still doing animal things, just reacting to, you know, this robot trudging through, this scary monster trudging through the forest, right? So I think you're right. I think they did a really good balance between cartoony and like realism.
I call it just on this side of Over the Hedge. On the more realistic side of Over the Hedge.
Yep.
So it still had some of that kind of craziness, because you got to in order to hit some of those comedy notes, but they tried to rein it in where they could, and all of the art just looked fantastic. The futuristic art of the robots and the other pieces where this clearly takes place in the future, because we get to see a really nice shot of the San Francisco Bay Bridge underwater, from what I can tell.
Cities underwater,
right? But the design on the buildings and the robots and the ships, just it was nice. It was clean without being distracting. It had personality, but not, you know, again, you're going to have a robot be the main character, and it's got to show emotion where it can't show emotion. So that's another kind of a design decision that you've got to put in there. How are you going to accomplish that?
And, you know, it's the little things, too, because obviously the robot, Roz, over time and in different situations became weathered.
Right.
Right?
That was really solid.
You had to add those elements to that presentation. And when you talk about props, the one thing I can go back to in terms of props,
the wood leg,
the home that they created,
right?
But the home had decorations in it, so the decorations were, you know, like laser etched, just cheesy little pictures. But those evolved, right? They kept growing. They fit the narrative. It all made sense. It looked really good. But even from a prop standpoint, too, it was, they collected sticks and rocks to create the big, you know, runway, to create the domed place where they were going to live. You know, when the paddle, the beaver was chomping on the gigantic tree, it made sense because it was a gigantic tree and it looked like a gigantic tree.
Yeah.
When he was building the dam and she's like, oh, I see your problem, and then picks up all the sticks, right? You know, all of those things were very good in the environment that they were placed in. So it wasn't even just the look of the animals. It was the pieces that the animals and the robot interacted with.
Yeah, it all kind of seamlessly fit and could be appropriated to either just be pretty or to fit the storyline or the notes they're trying to hit. Yeah, I don't think they could have done any better on that.
And even the little pseudo MacGuffin, her little...
Her antenna
thingy.
The transmitter.
Transmitter, yep. You know, trying to track that thing down, which, you know, led to a spiraling chaos of events. Even that little thing was just, as simple as it was, you know, just a cylinder-shaped little glowy thing. It looked like it fit.
Served its purpose, and it was right. So, yeah, what do you think? Out of 10 points, what do we give that?
10.
I agree. I couldn't really ask for anything more. That leads us to location. We kind of talked a little bit about that location with the home that was built, and they're on the island. You get to see elements of the greater world and the way that the ship worked, and the one thing you don't really see much of are people. You see a little tiny bit, but it's mostly just you get to absorb the world. So there's a lot of location to look at, but it's all mostly just nature on the island for the most part.
Yeah, you got that flyover where they were looking at the cities, but then you got, part of the storyline was them migrating, and then the migration hit a snag, and so they landed in that zone, right?
That
had the crops and the fields in it.
That was
awesome.
There
you got to see a little bit more of like what that modern world, quote modern world, looked like, which was obviously a very large contained area in which they had, specialized regions for going, and that's where all the robots were working, was to help them grow their crops. So that one was different,
right?
But it did have it showed up for more than just that reason of like, oh, it's a small plot point. They tied back to it at the end of the show too.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're right. A lot of it though was trees and woodlands and mountains and lakes and ponds and streams, stuff like that. So
it was kind of this strange thing because you got to see a lot of different stuff. It was kind of not different. It was mostly the same. It felt like it was different, but it wasn't really different. So that's maybe why I wouldn't give it a perfect score, because, ultimately you saw woods and you saw the hydroponic farm. And that's pretty much it. Not a lot of locations. The locations were excellent. Even the in the ship was done really well, but just not technically a lot of breadth for me. So that's a 9 out of 10 for the location.
No, I'm not gonna knock the variety in this one. It was hard to present variety, so I'm gonna give it a 10.
I guess I can respect that. score. Now, this wasn't one of those films that has a lot of modern-day songs in it. It's more, let me rephrase that, not like pop songs, not things that people are going to key off of. It's an actual score written to enhance the scenes and the moods and all the stuff that are going on. Did it fit seamlessly? Did it do for you what you felt that it needed to do?
I feel like sometimes part of that is to deliver the mood. Sometimes that is to complement the mood based on the visuals that you're getting. Sometimes part of it is to occupy space, right? Fill those blank spaces where otherwise you might not have anything. And the one thing I could definitely say on this one, I think the range of emotions in the movie was up and down all over the place, and the music really complemented that. The other thing too is the music was never overbearing and never distracting. I never found it got in the way of anything, or never, sometimes let's say if you're a Zack Snyder movie, the things become cheesy in a certain sense and distracting, but this one just, I think everything fit how it was intended to.
Yeah, and this may sound weird, but, a lot of times when you watch these animated films that have essentially just a no words orchestral background, they all kind of have a similar feel, a similar mood, or at least a similar delivery. And while it had something like that, it did, but it didn't. It still felt fresh somehow. And this was, at least a good chunk of it was done by DeLacy. I don't know if you're familiar with who that is.
No.
She's a singer, songwriter, but has done, you know, quite a bit of work in this kind of realm, to put it that way. But it felt fresh. I guess that's what, it's a long way of me going around saying it's the same, but it still felt fresh somehow.
Yeah, I wouldn't say it was the best thing I've ever heard, but once again, it wasn't overtaking what you were seeing, because really the main thing in this one was what you were, the visuals on this and the colors and the look and the feel of things. So I think it complemented everything very, very well.
Blended, accentuated, improved where necessary. That's an easy 9 out of 10 for me.
Yes, 9 for me.
Awesome. All right, cinematography. This is, again, kind of one of those weird things because it's animated. So we still some similarities to a real film, you know, where they decide to frame the scenes, how they're going to cut from one section to the next. You know, how are they going to do it? It's the one word that kind of hit me for this is just smooth.
I think when you needed to see everything, you saw everything. When you needed to focus just on a face, you got the focus on the face. When you had an interaction with two characters, but there were more around, you got the focus where the focus needed to be. With the cinematography, I feel like we blend in a lot of things, right? So we do the CGI and action movies. We do the fight sequences and the action movies. So this would be more like flight sequences, right? And we talked about this in animating the actual creatures or the characters. Did they run like an animal would run? Did they fly like an animal would fly? And I think a lot of that presentation really came through in how they delivered the message that they're trying to deliver through camera shots, right?
Oh, yeah.
It's so funny when they were talking about teaching him how to swim, but it was teaching him how to swim as if he was using his wings as arms.
Right.
Right? And it would just... He comes across the place where they're all gathering, and it just kind of like he opens the grass, and like there they all are. Like he'd never seen his own people, his own creatures before. And just that shot of him seeing all the stuff, not just seeing everybody, but then kind of showing him seeing all the stuff, but then cut back to him swimming out there as all the rest of them act as if you would have been walking by a park and seeing everything. So it was a very good collection of delivering an attitude in the film, besides the fact that the coloring and the lighting was just
gorgeous,
just amazing. But I think they really delivered in having the camera be where the camera needed to be and when it needed to be.
The time delay sequence when Roz is learning to speak the language of the animals, that was clever. I really liked the way they put that together.
Very good. You know, like they would see the creatures come up and like speed, and, but then you had on the screen the dialogue as it kind of slowly evolved into words that made sense. So that goes back into, you know, just the delivery of not only the cinematography and the shots and the color and the lighting, but the score, because there weren't any words.
Right.
So it had that kind of vibe to it that just made everything, make sense. Like that's, of some of the things that happen, that's what kind of drew me in even more to the movie, was like, see, now they're putting a realistic, quote, realistic spin onto this cartoon animated family. They're putting some realism buried deep in here.
Yeah, it was kind of a pleasure to see. I mean, if I had a criticism, I thought the action sequences were not real inspiring. They were very basic. But that's really the only only criticism I have, because it makes sense. It's not an action-heavy animated thing. It doesn't need to have, like, Jackie Chan choreographed level of kung fu or you know, anything that you're going to see in an 80s Schwarzenegger film. It's just, it can be simple. It can be basic, and it'll still work. Just, you know, part of my brain going, it's like, yo, they could have made that explosion a little bit more intense. And these aren't stormtroopers. These are robots that are programmed to precisely target things. Why are they missing everything? It's just like, come on. It's like, well, that's a story thing mostly, but it's still a choreography thing, because you need to have there be stakes, but you need this basically utilitarian robot that has no combat functionality along with some average animals to be able to win. And doing the Terminators against them really wouldn't have worked out all that well.
That's true, but did these Terminators have the experience of going against the woodland creatures in their programming?
Yeah, you wouldn't need it, because tracking is tracking.
But not when you're, you know, fast like a fox. You know?
Yeah, it doesn't matter. It really doesn't matter.
Or the bears are out there slashing, and the moose are out there moosing. You know,
when you can at this point clearly quantum compute and be able to do that kind of math instantaneously, it would not matter. Just they would all have been zorked in about 10 seconds. It would not have been a thing.
True, but that's a plot thing.
That is a plot thing. but cinematography, nearly perfect. 14 out of 15 for me.
I went all the way. I said 15.
All right, now to the plot and writing. This is the interesting thing. Now, a lot of times we talk about things that are based on comic books. This was not based on a comic book. This was based on a novel of the same name. Wild Robot was released in 2016 by Peter Brown. It's the first of three novels in a series. In fact, they're looking at making a sequel to the film and continuing along the series, from what I understand.
As long as it's the same set of people,
yeah.
Let's go.
If we can keep that quality up, heck yeah, do it. So this is not a new plot by any stretch of the imagination. I love the whole imprinting on the wrong person bit. That's fun. The robot that learns humanity, that's fun. Unlikely families, sure, that's fun. Where do you draw the line with logic? What is logical? What is emotional? You know, just it hits a lot of the fun notes that you're going to want to see in a film like this.
Well, honestly, nowadays when I watch a movie, part of just a small part, tiniest bit of the joy goes away, because I'm thinking in the back of my head, what's my score going to be for this? You know, like I'm processing that as I'm watching the movie. And as all these elements happen, I'm like, this plot score could either be a 5 or it could be a 20, because it is so predictable and so exactly there was no surprises.
No.
Even the surprises, there are no surprises. But then again, I'm just like, these are all the exact elements that you want out of a story like this.
Right.
So even though she's getting attacked by the bear and then falls down the mountain and smashes into a nest
of trash pandas.
I'm like, you know, you when you're like, oh, they're all dead. except for one. There's going to be one, right? Like you, there's no surprises in any of this stuff. Like that's just it. You know what? Some of the things that are surprises you talked about stakes before,
right?
You almost got some of those stakes, as in like something could be lost, there could be a problem, there could be an issue,
right?
You saw it kind of, you know, earlier on when the possum had six kids, and then she just like quickly switches, like they make the sound off the screen like rah, 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 rah. Like
five.
And then, oh no, five. Yeah. And then I'm watching this, I was like, oh, that was a joke.
It doesn't miss a beat.
No, and I'm counting like, wait a second. Nope, that other one's gone. I'm like, okay, they really just did that. They didn't, but
they could have.
But they could have, right? So there were hints of having that, you know, weight of things. It just all the plot points were cheesy without being cheesy. Let's just put it that way.
Well, I mean, and I think that the ultimate question is, because we know, like you say, there is no surprise if you're an adult anyway. There is no surprise. You know exactly what's going to happen because you know what the theme is. You know what the person's trying to communicate. You've seen this kind of thing before. So if there's not going to be any surprises, then you have to hit every beat perfectly. There cannot be a missed moment where the right emotion needs to come through and you're not supporting that emotion. You can't gloss over certain aspects of the cognitive leap to get from point A to point B. You have to go over all that, but do it in a way that's not condescending. It's a tightrope. And I mean, with the exception of some giant plot holes where where things would not have happened in the way that they could have happened, it hit all of the beats. And you have to have those plot holes. Otherwise, you don't have a story.
Yeah, the plot holes help advance the whole plot.
Right.
You know, some of the time elements to me weren't consistent, you know? Like when the robot was, when Roz was there in her learning mode, how long was she in the learning mode?
Right.
Because I got the impression that it was for a long time.
Weeks at least.
But in reality, yeah, it was just a short period of time. And some of the things as Bright Bill got older, I felt like we missed timing in there.
Oh yeah.
In a certain sense. But the movie itself was already an hour and a half, hour and 40 minutes. So like you can't add in there like the growing up elements, right?
Right.
And, you know, in realistic terms, I'm no animal expert, but I'm sure a goose actually does age pretty quickly from hatchling to flying. So.
Sounds plausible.
Yeah. But yeah, it's just like some of the timing elements just seemed off to me.
Yeah. Like I said, things like, oh, this giant company where these robots are. If the robot was important enough that if it had a transponder that they would send out a ship to go pick it back up, then there's no way they would have lost track of a whole shipment of robots. They would have known exactly where they were and come to get them earlier, much earlier.
Yeah, was it... well, there was a storm, right?
Right.
So... they were lost at sea in theory, and we didn't really know early on in the show. It appeared as though she was the only one.
Yeah.
So, you know, in theory, if one fell off a ship, which would be weird anyway, then eventually there were more that were found just for random exploration.
What I'm saying is that if you build it, you're not going to depend on the robot to turn on the tracking. It's going to be on all the time. It's going to be consistent. So it's going to be passive. We already have that technology. We'd be moving backwards to make the robot go, yeah, come find me. So, I mean, to me, that's a huge plot hole, but it's a necessary one to get the plot moving forward.
Yeah, it's a huge hole that happens to be a driver for the plot.
Right.
You know, interesting.
You know, the fact that that the robot is able to convince all of the animals not to eat each other. That's very sweet. Nope. That's never going to happen. I understand, again, certain personification. You understand the language. They still have brains the size of peas. The ones that are going to want to eat the ones are still going to eat the ones. It's just going to happen. But then you don't get your message across, and it doesn't work. So, I mean, just very necessary, huge plot holes that are just, they're holes, but they're beautiful because they're there.
And even some of the things that are the relationship building elements, you know, when he was very young, he would sit on Roz's shoulder.
Right.
And then later on, she misses him sitting on the shoulder. It's very overplayed.
Mm-hmm.
But it still fits, right? Yeah. Like that, like that's a predictable thing. Like, oh,
they're going to erase her memory, and her heart brings her memory back. No, that's not how computers work. Afraid not, but I'm glad you did it because that makes it, you know, more effective.
More effective. Yep. And you know, at the very end, they fly back to that location that's got the fields.
Right.
And he, you know, he pokes his head out. Because it's the sun, so he would know.
Which one
was his. How are you
going
to know which one it is, right?
That's the other thing. It's like, all right. It's not like their designation is on the outside of the robot.
Nope.
Too funny.
But. Of course, we're nitpicking on all that stuff, and everything came out the way it was supposed to. You know, winter was really cold. It was a harsh storm, but she saved everybody. Okay, like we couldn't see that coming,
right?
She said she was going to go back to where she needed to. He was going to fly to where he needed. Why don't you stay? I don't belong here. Blah 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 blah. Like, she's going to stay. Like, we know that that's going to happen.
Maybe if I had a real criticism, I'd say they downplayed death too much. So, like, you were talking about Nye's character annoying you vocally. He's the only one that really dies in terms of, characters that have spoken words. But he dies basically off screen. And then they never really address it. Other than it's like, oh, sad, he's gone kind of thing for like a half of a split second. When they're going looking for people in the snow, and they dig in the one spot, and then they cover the snow back up. If you're a kid, you're not going to catch that.
Yeah, he dug, and then he like shook his head, and then covered it back up.
Right.
And that was like a 5-second snippet. Right.
So it's like, no, let's get some actual understanding that death is real, and it's haunting them. Just a little bit, but when you just move out of the Smurfs a little closer to Aesop's Fables, you know, just a smidge, maybe not Brothers Grimm, you know, it's like, but you just, we need a little bit more.
Did you want them to bring an animal that they thought they had saved back and then the animal was actually dead? And then, like, they're
okay,
carnivores,
you can eat
all
that one.
Yeah, yeah. They all, that's what I was going to say, that they just, they all ate that one.
It's the Donner Party. Woo!
That scene got chopped.
Yeah, that was on the floor.
Cutting room floor.
But all in all, I thought the plot was excellent. The characterization, you had good design of the characters. They had good character growth, and you had a fun plot, even if it was predictable. I got to give that a 16 out of 20.
I said it could have been a 5, it could have been a 20, so I kind of went somewhere higher and in between and a 15.
All right, so that brings us as a final totals, unless we got a bonus point. I don't have any bonus points. You got any bonus points?
No bonus points.
No bonus points. Well, you gave them a solid A- with a 90, and I gave them a solid B- with an 88. It's a fun film. Worth watching and rewatching.
Some big scores. Probably one of the better movies I've seen in a while, and I'll definitely watch it again.
Yeah, definitely so. Dear listeners, were we close to your score? Was this film close to your heart? Or were we way off the mark and this was just utter trash? Let us know. We're on some of the social medias. You know which ones. You can let us know your opinion. You can write up your response, and we will even tip a little hat to you and say, we love that you said something, and this is what we think. Or, you were wrong, shut up. Well, you probably won't do that one. But
of course, it would be the first time that someone would have done that. So
pretty much.
You would be the inaugural shout out.
Oh yeah. So I think we'll have some other fun stuff coming up next week. The week after that, I know we're going to do the review of Captain America. I know what we'll do next week. We've been wanting to do a music episode. We'll do a music episode next week.
Like ballroom?
Yes, tap dancing instructions for the uninitiated and incapable.
I like it.
Until next time.